How could I sign my name when my hands are tied?
They will take off your chains.
There are other chains, stronger chains that hold me back.
What other chains still stronger?
Stronger than the chains of iron, the chains of love. It is love that ties my hands. I cannot sign. It is truth that ties my hands. I cannot sign. I cannot lie.
Bridal robe. you'd like to get off your chest at this time.
Yes. During the Minneapolis shooting, we had no intention of harming anyone. We tried to stop the car, and that's all. After we crashed, things happened fast. Before we knew it, it was all over with. We couldn't have been more sorry than we were. We couldn't make ourselves to surrender because we didn't want to serve life.
Is there any particular thing you've learned during the last several months, Jim?
Well, we couldn't have been more rehabilitated than we were at that time after that happened. But we told ourselves, even though we wouldn't surrender, that we wouldn't shoot to kill. But we'd let them kill us before we'd kill anyone. And that's what happened out here to gain refuge, except that an innocent man's life was taken, but not by us.
Do you have any word of advice or last word you'd like to issue before you leave here tonight?
Well, there was no gun battle at the Erie Game Refuge. Just speaking realistically, if there would have been, things would have turned out a lot different.
You feel real sorry, Jim?
Sure, naturally I'm sorry. Mostly for the Lindgren family and children. It's my main purpose in trying to get this trial, because I wanted them to know that we didn't kill their father.
How do you feel about the verdict tonight, Jim? Is there anything you'd like to say about it?
Well, I don't feel there's no fault to the jury. But even though I've been found guilty, myself or my brothers aren't guilty.
James,
we meet here for our friend, brother, husband, father, Peter Schenect. It is the spring, the time of the lilacs, the time when all nature says to us there is no death. Nothing is destroyed, but is transformed to larger life. Whom shall we address in saying now farewell? He who traveled a short while towards the sun and left the air signed with his struggle. When lilacs last in the dooryard bloomed and the great star early drooped in the western sky in the night, I mourned, and we shall mourn with ever-returning spring. Ever-returning spring, Trinity sure to me you bring, lilac blooming perennial and drooping star in the west, and thought of him we love. In the dooryard fronting an old farmhouse near the whitewashed paling stands the lilac bush, tall growing with heart-shaped leaves of rich green, with many a pointed blossom rising delicate with the perfume strong we love, with every leaf a miracle And from this bush in the dooryard with delicate colored blossoms and heart-shaped leaves of rich green, a sprig with its flower we bring. In the swamp, in secluded recesses, a shy and hidden bird is warbling a song. Solitary the thrush, the hermit withdrawn to himself, avoiding the settlement, sings by himself a song. A song of the bleeding heart, death's outlet song of life. For well, dear brother, I know, if thou wast not granted to sing, thou wouldst surely die. Over the breast of the spring, the land, amid cities, amid lanes, and through old woods where lately the violets peeped from the ground, spotting the gray debris, amid the grass in the fields, each side of the lanes, passing the endless grass, passing the yellow-speared wheat, every grain from its shroud, in the dark brown fields uprisen, passing the apple tree, glows of white and pink in the orchards, passing all these things of life, we think of him through day and night. All over bouquets of roses, O death, I cover you over with roses and early lilies, but mostly and now the lilac that blooms the first. Copious I break the sprigs from the bushes. With loaded arms we come, pouring for you the lilacs. Dark mother, always gliding near with soft feet, take him home. Have none chanted for thee a chant of fullest welcome? Then we chant it for thee. We glorify thee above all, and bring thee a song that when thou must indeed come, come unfalteringly, approach strong, deliver us. When it is so, when thou hast taken them, I joyously sing the dead, lost in the loving floating ocean, laved in the flood of bliss. Passing the visions, passing the night, passing unloosing the hold of our comrade's hands, passing the song of the hermit bird and the tallying song of the soul, victorious song, death's outlet song, yet varying, ever-altering, as low and wailing, yet clear the notes rising and falling, flooding the night. We leave thee, lilac, with heart-shaped leaves. We leave thee there in the dooryard, blooming, returning with spring, memory ever to keep for the dead we love so well. For the sweet, wise soul, for his dear sake, lilac and star and bird, twined with the chant of the soul, there in the fragrant pines and the cedars, dusk and dim, we leave thee, lilac, we leave thee, lilac.
Thank you. got away from his prepared time.
He didn't have any paper with him.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't. And then he had what the Undertaker gave him. Oh, there he is.
Peter J. Shimmick was born January 27, 1888, in a log cabin near Antigo, Wisconsin, and passed away May 14, 1958, in Minneapolis at the age of 70 years, 3 months, and 17 days. He was a veteran employee of the Soo Line Railroad and was a member of the Boilermakers and Blacksmiths Union Local 11, and for many years was secretary of that local. He was also a member of the Fraternal Order of Eagles, Erie 1247, and the EMBA Lodge. Mr. Shimmick is survived by his wife, Ethel, a daughter, Mrs. Harold Clem, St. Paul, 3 sons, James and Fred, Los Angeles, California, and Frank, Minneapolis, a stepson, Brian Crook, Minneapolis, 2 brothers, Joseph and Fred Shimmick, 2 sisters, Mrs. Rose Van Slyke and Mrs. Harry Kirkle, all of South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and 9 grandchildren. Interment at the close of this service will be in Lakewood Cemetery. Pete went to work at the age of 14 and worked through his entire life. Although 70 years old, he never retired. At the age of 16, he became a blacksmith's apprentice and followed the trade of the blacksmiths up until the end. At 21, he was elected secretary of the Blacksmiths Union in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. His parents were pioneers. His father was a skilled craftsman, a carpenter, and a cabinet maker, who was very particular about his work, even as Pete was very particular about his work. The company recognized his ability. When they opened a new factory in Canada, they wanted him to go there to head the operations. But Pete refused. The company was mad about the whole thing, but Pete refused to go. And when he was leaving Milwaukee, the workers hated to see him go, but they came and waved and said goodbye, Pete. Even as we today don't want to see him go, but we have to wave and say goodbye, Pete. He traveled considerably in his younger days. He went west, worked in Miles City, Montana, worked in the oil fields, worked on the Panama Canal, went to New York, and worked in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. There he met and married his first wife, Lucy. Then he went west again, went to Seattle, was there during the general strike in 1919. Evidently, he was looking for more job security, came here in April 1927, and went to work for the Soo Line shops. Of course, he got to the Soo Line shops. He didn't find any organization there, a legal organization, labor organization. He found a company union. So he knew what he had to do. He organized the Soo Line shops. During the Depression, he fought for unemployment insurance. He had the welfare of the American people at heart. And it was difficult in those days. The newspapers screamed that if the unemployment insurance bill was passed, this nation, this country would become a nation of loafers. Nobody would want to work when they collected unemployment insurance. They also stated that the bill was communistic. While the people were not to be denied, the unemployment insurance bill was passed. And we saw the benefits of the unemployment insurance bill, especially for the veterans. Mostly young men who served 6, 7, 8 years in World War II were drafted before they had a job. When they came back, they received unemployment insurance. Maximum up to 52 weeks, the 5220 Club. In 1938, the railroad companies wanted to drive the wages of the railroad workers down. They wanted to cut their wages. And, of course, the railroad unions were divided. Some belonged to the AFL, some were independent unions. But the unions knew their backs were to the wall, and they united, put up a common front, and forced the railroad companies to back up. Pete devoted his time and effort to the defense of the deportation victims, the victims of the Walter McCarran Law. He fought for the labor movement, believed in their principles, believed in civil rights for the American people. Secretary Treasurer of the local, Levin, for many years, not only entrusted with the finances, but also with the duties of taking care of the union's correspondence. I've been to his home a few times during weekends, and there he was, writing letters, writing resolutions to congressmen, senators, for this bill and against this bill. In the shops, Pete was very helpful. When his fellow workers came and asked him to fix this or that, he didn't say, well, I haven't got time, or I have someone else do it, or we'll do it later. He always did it. He was very accommodating. During his generation, there were many foreign-born workers working on the railroad. They weren't ashamed to come him with their problems because they trusted and respected him. And though they didn't have the opportunity to have a better education, they had language difficulties, Pete, with his great patience, was able to find out what their problems were and help them. And so, to us in the labor movement, Pete Shimmick will always be our beloved brother. And as we bid him farewell, we want to remind him that we will continue the fight to end the recession, continue the fight for full employment, continue the fight for increased benefits, increased coverage, and longer payments for unemployment insurance until we get full employment, for better social security, for more old age pensions, and above all, to end war, to have peace. Because he would like to see every man, woman, child, regardless of race, creed, or color, walk this earth so proud and free. So with this speech, we bid you goodbye.
Whom shall we address then in saying now farewell? For wherever there is struggle for life, he will be. He is our hunger and our need. He will be in our strong step, marching against all locks. For none shall die who have the future in them. For over him there stands the deathless purpose. Our memory will not pass with this day's singing, for we raise monuments immortal in man's heart that he helped forge. He was of the uncompleted lovers of the future. He was of those men between the thunder and the lightning crash, a blacksmith who forged a dream, one of the bright warriors who believed that humanity would blossom after him, and that we build firm upon the light of time. He was a runner into the future, and we pick up that torch.
Yours, Ruth E. Siegler, Arthur A. Dear Starkenberg, Pearl and I wish to join with all your many, many friends and adherents in expressing pleasure on the eve of your trip abroad. We're happy that this experience should be in prospect for you, knowing how interesting and inspiring you will find it and make it. Your great capacity for interest and enthusiasm and concern for the welfare and happiness of others enables you to bring to your own life a fullness and richness that is unique. How sweet and to the gifts of others, may we add our contribution and express our wish that it may come in handy somewhere along your itinerary. Your friend Pearl and Herman Griffith. Well, how do wish we could be with you today. You see, I've been gone 3 weeks on a vacation out west as far as Los Angeles. And the spring is such a busy time on the farm. We got back from our trip May 4th, and since then we've been on the steady goal, had a wonderful time. Now, dear Susie, we hope you have the most wonderful trip, because no one deserves it more than you do. And I'm so glad your old and dear friends are with you today to wish you a bon voyage, and we all hope you will be back younger and better than ever. She didn't say better looking than ever.
She didn't need to.
She didn't need to.
You improve with age.
With love, Art and Lena Borchert. We are sending a little farewell gift. Emily and George Viking Stinson.
Now listen.
Yes. Dear Mrs. Carlson, we tried to call you yesterday, but we're unable to get in touch with you. Anyway, we hope to be at 2415 Garfield Street Northeast on the evening of May 17th to wish, as you suggest, a bon voyage to Susie Stargerberg for her trip to Norway. Sincerely, Emily and George Bagenson.
Isn't that nice?
You will be able to feel the pulse of world opinion on hydrogen bomb tests, on peace, on disarmament, on peaceful coexistence. You have richly earned this opportunity. We are sure you will return to those of us who love you an even stronger fighter for human progress. Isn't that beautiful?
And they have already sent their money.
This is a bon voyage
card.
Sunny skies, a calm blue sea, friendly folks for company. May these and happy times combine to make your voyage simply fine. And they did take the list and cut out most of it. So that was my first advice. Oh yes, whether to lug an umbrella or not. Okay. My sister in Iowa wrote, and she said she had heard that it rained in Norway. And so she said, I'm taking my umbrella. So I wrote back and said, I'm not taking my umbrella, but I have bought a raincoat and a lid. Well, where you can get the best steak. Well, I was having a really swell dinner with my inventor son one night, much more swell than I would have liked to order, but anyway, that's what we were doing. So, the question, and they were having steak, and I was having walleye pike.
Hello.
And so the question came, about what kind of food we would have in Norway.
Yes.
Well, I said I hope they have goat's milk and
flatbread
and maybe some remoulade. Remoulade.
You'll get it.
Yeah.
What's that?
That's cream mush.
Oh, it's
remoulade.
And So they said, Mom,
yeah.
Instead of steak,
well,
then we'll settle for fish. So there goes the steak.
Get the money for the lunch.
How much cash you should carry? My sister wrote me, she says, I've been to the preacher who is the head of our society, of the log that is going over there. And I asked him about a lot of things. I asked him about money. And so I'm not having very much money in my purse. I am making myself a chamois bag that I'm going to have inside of my brassiere. I'll put my traveler's checks in that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So there you see, that settles the...
You carry your money in that thing that we gave you? That did you?
I had some of it in there, yes. Uh-huh.
I wondered how that worked out.
I swung it around another way.
I use mine on both trips.
Did you?
All the time.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else have
well,
we got?
Well, what sights you've got to see. Well, that I haven't had any advice about.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I meet all my cousins that they'll have a lot of advice in that regard. And they'll probably have the right to make quite a few decisions. So remains to be seen. But here is the only piece of advice that you're gonna get from us. Have fun.
Isn't that cute?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Special preparation, because we hope to hear, hope that all of you can have the opportunity and will use it to say a few words and whatever you want to. It's to be your program, and then we hope to hear from Susie again and again, off and on, through the time. And you are Quanbeck. Oh, yes. You're all...
Say,
gone.
Honey, now you get up and tell me about the old times.
No, I'm not even good at that. I just can't say anything. Oh, yes, you can.
No.
Listen, you can in this crowd.
Yeah,
you can
no,
say
no,
what
no,
you
no,
want to.
Well,
I said
let him
go on. All right.
Well, it's certainly awful easy to say some good things about
somebody else comes in.
And I don't know if I could say anything that she don't remember about some of the things that did happen in the years ago. Now, things are a little different now politically than they used to be. We never used quite so much strategy in the old days as we use now. But we knew we were right, and we went right ahead. Always followed Mrs. Stockford. She took the spear point. And for many years, she was our candidate. When we knew there was no chance of sending her to the ultimate seat of power, but we had to keep the ticket full, so she was always willing. And she sacrificed all her own time, and it should have been used, presumably, for her own pleasure. And it goes back a long time. You know, way back in the old days, we had the Populist Party, and we had some girls during that time, too, that really were swell. Now, like Mary Yellen, Mary Lees of Kansas, she told the farmers to raise less corn and raise more hell. Well, that was shortly before Mrs. Stockerberg got out on the soapbox and went to work. Then we had the People's Party. Tough going. Old Vic Lawson Wilmer was with us and many other prominent people. And if they were real progressive, the agitators were called anarchists. And there were pictures on the papers, you know what? Knife in the mouth and bomb in each hand. And then, well, they run out of funds and things fell apart. Mrs. Stagerberg was young, but she was with us. Then the nonpartisan league came in. Then Susie really blossomed out. Boy, was she with us over these prairies of Minnesota, year after year. But then something happened. They didn't like the word nonpartisan league, so they labeled us the Huns. Because we were trying to organize a respectable, honest, informative unit to take part in politics at the time the First World War was on. And we had a lot of night workers during those times. That old Dave Evans and Marshall and Charles Lindbergh of Little Falls, Congressman Charles Lindbergh, Tom Davis, and Susie Stoddard. She was with us all the time, right through that fight. Then in 1920, then by golly, they had a new slogan. Billboards all over the state of Minnesota. You couldn't see the fog coming in from Los Angeles at all. Save the state from socialism.
Yeah.
And who was trying to put across socialism? It must have been Susie, because she was still in the fight.
And then she was sociable.
We went on through the 20s. Oh, it was tough going. Some of us were tempted to vote Republican that year. LaPollock was a candidate. But we didn't want to hurt his feelings too bad by sending him down there, because we wouldn't have given him an office. They kicked him out of his private office when he came back. But it's the Republicans do about it. Then we went on through the Depression. Susie was still in there. And by golly, she's still here. Hasn't changed a bit. She looks the same, she acts the same, she thinks the same. And I believe where President Eisenhower made a mistake was, he should have sent Susie down south in place of Nixon.
I have been told that I'm a good listener at times. But anyway, these so-called reform movements that all of us have been in, I guess, most of our lives, they look hopeless and not really worthwhile at times. But still, when you look back, I can remember as a little fellow when the talk a good deal was on the populace, and they had the Omaha platform. It was quite a famous platform, put out about in 1880 or somewhere around there. And some of the big things like popular election of United States Senators. When I was growing up, we didn't have that. The legislature selected. And that was, it was really awful to think that people would advocate a thing like that, popular election of United States Senators. What did the people know about senator work anyway? But you could go on down the line that way, and practically everything that we worked for from that time on, from 1880 and up, why, now we have it every day. And people don't think anything about it.
And we get some big people coming.
And it's all right. And even socialism is really growing. Maybe I don't mean the Socialist Party or anything like that. But you know, we have socialism in so many places in this country today. And many people are hollering for more socialism. They don't call it socialism. But they want the government to do this for them and give them this and the other. And what is it really? But socialism. I'm wondering what people really do with these that are so strong against socialism. They can wake up to the fact that they've been hollering for it and really advocating that means socialism. When they do wake up.
Hello, how are you?
Hello.
How are you? How do you do?
It's nice to see you.
The reader would be superfluous for me to enumerate the many good things about the Sagerberg, so I don't think really I go into that. I think many of you will, and we all know her here and believe to feel, so I think I will just go for saying good luck on the trip to the sea and have a good time.
Thank you so much.
And here we have a chance.
Certainly a great pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation, and I want to join in the congratulations not only to Mrs. Sagerberg, but to those who have arranged this program, Mrs. Carlson in particular. There are many here who want to say something, I'm sure. And if one person took all the time that there is, it wouldn't be enough to commence to begin to tell the value of the work that Susie Sagerberg has done for the people of this state in the days of the Nonpartisan League and the days of the Farm Labor Party, and later in the days of the Democratic Farm Labor Party. I happen to be one of those who had the opportunity to cooperate with Mrs. Sagerberg in those days when the battle was a little tougher than it is now, although perhaps more exciting and more interesting. And in all the trials that had to be met, all the situations that had to be taken care of, Mrs. Sagerberg was always in the forefront and never hesitated in her devotion to the great cause of the people of Minnesota, represented by the Nonpartisan League and the Farm Labor Party, and later the DFL. And Mrs. Kramer and I wish to join in the felicitations that I know Mrs. Sagerberg will receive, and to hope that she may receive as much pleasure from this journey she's going to take to the old country as she has helped in contributing to the people of the state of Minnesota.
Frank, and
I have the real honor and pleasure to know Mrs. Sagerberg personally, but I've heard much about her. I used to read her column in the Minnesota Leader over and over again. I've had a lot of admiration for the things that she stood for over the years, and she has made a real contribution towards making our society a little more humane. And this is something that I, for one, want to pay tribute to her, because in reading over and looking over the liberal program and how it's developed, the Nonpartisan League, the forerunners for much of the social legislation that came on in the New Deal was developed by the pioneers in the liberal movement like her. And I want to pay my little tribute to a good fighter, and not just a summer fighter, but a winter fighter who was in there pitching and battling when the times were rough, as Bob Kramer so ably mentioned here. And I think it's wonderful that Mrs. Carlson has brought friends around to say good sailing to Mrs. Sagerberg when she goes to the Scandinavian country for a visit.
I think Webster, when he wrote the Designated Dictionary, he didn't get the right words in there from Mrs. Sagerberg. I guess the words aren't in the dictionary, but I'd like to say to her. So I just have to say that she's a wonderful girl. I've enjoyed being to the meetings where she's been. She's always had good ideas. I never seen her, but if she got off on the wrong track, she always can be on the right track at our meetings, always. And the rest, I'll say, a good trip.
Today, my first knowledge of the Dagobergs was in connection with our college work out in the Red Wing area. And I've always been interested in seeing and meeting her after I knew about that those college days there. And the rest of you with me have enjoyed her work with us in our political movement for many years. I thank you.
If I were to start,
I think I should start where I can talk to everybody. It isn't too important.
But
I have to say, it's not important for me.
But it has been very important to me.
Sit down over that chair.
I am.
Unfortunately, Mrs. Dagobert has always been an institution in her own right. And that's more than most people can say. And my first acquaintanceship with her dates back to, well, to the early movement of the Nonpartisan League and the Real Liberal Movement. I came from South Dakota, but I had the background of the University of Wisconsin, where we thought things through in quite a different manner from what they do in many other Western universities of this section of the country, or colleges for that matter. I had some friends who knew them from New Mississippi, I think from Montevideo, was that it? The shops, the talk, I always carried the flag. I felt that that was the beginning of my political activities, really. And those who knew Mrs. Kingsley would know what that means. So Mrs. Dagobert was on the ticket. And she was out for getting elected. And Mrs. Kingsley said to me, you know, we should, you must meet her. We like her. And then a little newspaper notice came to my attention, and that interested me very much because it differed from most of them. And this is what it was. They said Mrs. Dagobert had been asked if she were a communist. And she said, I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't say that I'm a communist because I don't know enough about it. I don't know enough about communism to know whether that's what I am or not. And I don't go out against anything that I don't know what it is. Well, that to me was refreshing because that's something you seldom hear in a political campaign. And set him up as a man who really found the land. Now, if you can beat that, I'd like to know it. And they didn't say much to me about my talk. Neither did the other two performers said nothing to me about my talk. They waited for me to say something about theirs. Well, I didn't, because I was too busy thinking about how I came through. But we had a real nice, interesting program. And I hope we can have many more when she comes back. You must remember this is like this, this is the day.
Now, I'll call you Mother Steckenberg, not Mrs. Steckenberg, because you're so dear to my humble mother. Well, the past years, everybody expressed themselves, and I do not take the time, because I don't know. But I remember when you were running for lieutenant to governor, and the rain was pouring terrible. And I ran out and I said to my husband, I must distribute this literature for our Mother Steckenberg. And I came across with so many arguments that I said to the people, please, do not ask me all these difficult questions. I'm just a plain, ordinary housewoman without any basic education. But this woman appeals so much to my soul, and I feel like to take the literature, heal the literature, if you read it, you're getting acquainted with that person, when you're conscious, will never permit you to vote for anybody else except for Satan. So they took the literature. And some I was pretty successful. Some they read it right in my presence. And I was very happy. when I came back for my 3 years and said, "My, you look like you brought in the rain in the house." So I wish you a happy treat, and you shall come healthy, and we shall have many, many get-togethers with our mother, Stegenberg, and we shall get, it's too bad we haven't got a lot of mothers like you. Thank you.
Come here on the pretext of celebrating the 17th of May, setting the line. And of course, since I'm the kind of Norwegian that Mrs. Sterling talked about, I was just delighted to do just that. I had no idea of what was going to happen here, but I knew one thing was to happen, and that was that I was to sing Jag vi älskar. Jag vi älskar detta landet. Yes, we love with fond devotion. That's the translation. And she provided the music, and she also instructed me. I used to take high C. I don't take it anymore. So of course you'll understand. Ja, vi älskar detta landet som det stiger fram. För ett fejerbit haver vannet med ett tusen gäng. Älskar, älskar det jag tänker på vår far och mor.
think I know a little too. I would say that during probably Mrs. Dagerberg's earliest and most active days, I was among the politically illiterate, and all I knew about the Nonpartisan League and such organizations was what I heard my parents say around the dinner table, which was that they were for the people and against the government. but as I grew older, I became interested, and for another long period of time, my activities were devoted mostly to working in the CIO Ladies Auxiliaries, and I remember particularly Mrs. Carlson saying how glad she was that some of us younger ones were beginning to do something, because, and this was a good long time ago, but I was hiring babysitters for my daughter, who is now a sophomore in college. But then, after another period of time, I myself became involved in something which was somewhat controversial, and in which I found that many people did not care to be associated with the committee I was working with, not because they disagreed, but because they hesitated to be associated with an organization that was getting the ire of the Justice Department and of the Un-American Activities Committee. Such was not the case with Mrs. Dagerberg. When I asked her to be a sponsor of our committee, to appear at our conferences and so forth, she gladly and willingly did it and contributed very greatly to the Committee for Protection of Foreign Board. And I think perhaps the thing that sums it up best is when I asked her last year to help me when we had persuaded the governor to proclaim an appreciation of the Foreign Born Day, and did not have too great success getting people to work with us in making that a great success. And I called on Mrs. Dagerberg to help. She gladly and willingly said that she would write a column for the Post. And in summing up, we were talking on the telephone, she said, "Mrs. Foley, I know very well what they're trying to do to you and your organization, but you're right, and I will always stand with you."
So many nice things have been said about it. All I can do is wish her happy Foley to be with her.
Happy as many. I just hope you have good health and the very best of luck in everything you do.
I also love Susie, and hope she has a very nice journey.
Well, I just pressed my thanks for the many wonderful letters she used to write in the years when we were living on the farm and trying to bring up six children. We were without a voice, except people like Susie would speak and fight for us. I know she's just going to take this trip in good order, because I was living in Philadelphia. How many days did we ride on that bus?
Well, we were three nights without changing our clothes. I mean,
she was just as fresh as everybody when we stepped off the bus. And I marveled how she could find her way around Philadelphia. We wondered, she got on the bus all alone, she would arrive at the right destination, so I'm sure she'll make out all right.
Oh, I just want to mention something my brother-in-law said, about the convict. He said, Susie came once, he said, when Mother was canning, right in the midst of canning, she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, Susie says, that don't make any difference. I'll just help you." And she pitched in and helped. I just wanted to wish you all kinds of luck.
Have you been to Norway before?
No.
You're going to have, of course, a terribly moving experience. To go to the land of your forefathers and to see those, at first, to see those stark mountains standing up there, and to think of our forefather that left that country. It is something very moving. You will go there and you will have so much to notice. And one thing I noticed, there are so many things. They have kept the past. You can see how they lived. When our parents came over here, I was 3 months old when I came, and I went back there the first time when I was 71 years old.
I know how I felt, and I know how you will feel, even though you were born here. It is something that can hardly be described. We went to the, you will probably, you're going to Bergen sometime. And you're going to Oslo, and you will see how they have kept up the museums and have kept the crack of the old. See how they lived hundreds of years ago. See how people and working people lived. And that is something to notice. The hired girl, for instance, in their homes, they showed a little cubby hole of a bed with the lid would come down and be used for a kitchen table in the daytime, and the hired girl would crawl in there night. And how their hours, there was no limit to their hours of labor and so on. And now they quit work at 4 o'clock and they go off on their bicycles and with their lunch on their back, and away they go. And labor and working people and all people have it good. They pay so much attention to their old people, and they pay so much attention to their children. It is just an inspiration. My cousin said, do you see how carefree the people are here? It was in the evening when we were going away the next morning, but a boat had come in, a beautiful big boat, and all the teenagers and the young people came down to the wharf, the boat landed. And he said, do you see how happy they all are and carefree? He said, and then he'd been in Brooklyn visiting his son. He says, I never saw a carefree face in all the United States all the time I was there. Well, I told him, there are plenty of them. So, some of you perhaps knew about politically at one time. And he had a correspondent, a younger correspondent in Norway. And she told me, I visited my father's home and my mother's home, and I had emigrated all over the country there for quite a while. Well, anyway, she told me that she asked him, do you ever think of Trollefjella and of the mountains here at home? And he wrote back and said, there is never a day that I don't think of it. That was what Emily wrote back. So you can understand how some of us feel. We belong in America, but we also feel at home in the other land. And we know, we realize more and more how we are brothers everywhere, how we belong with other people, wherever you are. It doesn't matter. And particularly should that be true for the American people who have ancestry everywhere. To that big peace conference in that beautiful hall in Helsinki. And we met the Finnish people there. I say that we were extremely well treated everywhere. But if we wanted to ask directions in Helsinki, they wouldn't just tell us where to go, pointed out. They'd turn around from wherever they were going and go with us until they were sure we would get into the place we wanted. Over, we met them from Africa, from Italy, from the Cyprus,
South America,
from and South America, Brazil. I have a scarf that I brought from Brazil that was given us. And we met them from and I know they'll think you belong there.
My young son sneaked in the back door to pay his respects to Susie. Yes, we're going to say
well on him.
When I returned from Europe, I first learned that he was president of the Carpenters Union. I was very proud of him.
I cannot go back as far as Oscar and some of these others. Deb, I'm sorry, Susie, but I think I've known you and known of you since I was old enough to walk.
Yeah.
Old enough to peddle campaign literature, let us say. and I remember old Colliams and the farmer labor Minnesota Leader. Sometimes, even as part of that time, I wasn't old enough to read the biggest words in it. But I know that she's been fighting for a long time, and I've had the opportunity to sit here in my mother's home and talk with her at occasional times. And the average younger person would say, well, an older woman like that couldn't be too interesting, but she's been real inspirational and has been very, in a young person's idea where he knows it all. I've sat and talked with Susie, and I've got some very fine inspirations, and I wish to extend my best wishes for us.
Say a few words. I think it was 1920 that Susie ran for Secretary of State on the new Farmer Labor Party. Am I right?
I was candidate in 22 and 24 and 28.
My husband and I were married in 1920, and we came here and we got into the thick of the farmer labor movement. I'll never forget when Magnus Johnson ran for president. I was on the election board, and we took Vincent with us. He was 2.5 years old, I believe. And he sneaked away from us over at the polling place, and he went on the steps. And everybody that came in, he said, vote for Magnus Johnson. Well, ever since that time, Susie has been an inspiration to me. I just thought she was the most wonderful woman. Everything I read about her and saw of her, and that friendship has not ceased in all these years. These last 2 years, I've had the pleasure of having her here at my home, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. She's always got something good to offer. And I know she's going to enjoy her trip to Norway, as I did this last summer. As Matt says, you're sure it's an experience that you will not forget. In fact, when I climbed the mountains and remembered the stories my mother told, I was inspired to write a poem. And I shall always treasure the impressions that I had. I think all you people from the Twin Cities here that have your letters, this is a voluntary contribution party. You will find a copper bowl by Susie's picture there on the TV, and that's where you can pay your respects to Susie. And then I think pretty soon we will be ready to serve lunch. The Kramers and the Adamses, I'm sorry to say, are going to have to leave. They're having an opera tonight.
Can they hear from Susie?
Yeah, first we have. So if you, they have to leave the